Thank you, digitally required. I remember the post on our website that those of you who are not here, but some of you are able to access those. And we're working on the glitches now, but Karen Pierce, we're working on those, and that, so you can begin to find those.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is just so much fun to be back here and visit, and it's one of my favorite things to do, knowing that this is one of the churches that really stands behind me and stands with me in partnership in ministry in Thailand, and I'm so grateful for that, and I really feel that partnership when I'm working there in Thailand. It's not just something I say, but I feel it deeply, the prayer and the support of people here in the U.S. that are standing there with me, that I'm really not serving alone. So the text today comes from the book of Ezekiel, chapter 37, verses 1 through 14. And the text says, "The hand of the Lord was upon me, and he brought me out by the Spirit of the Lord, and set me in the middle of a valley, and it was full of bones. He led me back and forth among them, and I saw a great many bones on the floor of the valley, bones that were very dry. And he said to me, 'Son of man, can these bones live?' I said, 'O sovereign Lord, you alone know.' Then he said to me, 'Prophesy to these bones, and say to them, Dry bones, hear the word of the Lord. This is what the sovereign Lord says to these bones: I will make breath enter you, and you will come to life. I will attach tendons to you, and make flesh come upon you, and cover you with skin. I will put breath in you, and you will come to life. Then you will know that I am the Lord.' And so I prophesied as I was commanded, and as I was prophesying, there was a noise, a rattling sound, and the bones came together, bone to bone. I looked, and tendons and flesh appeared upon them, and skin covered them, but there was no breath in them. Then he said to me, 'Prophesy to the breath. Prophesy, son of man, and say to it, This is what the sovereign Lord says: Come from the four winds, O breath, and breathe into these slain, that they may live.' And so I prophesied as he commanded me, and breath entered them. And they came to life, and they stood up on their feet, a vast army. Then he said to me, 'Son of man, these bones are the whole house of Israel. They say, Our bones are dried up and our hope is gone. We are cut off. Therefore, prophesy and say to them, This is what the sovereign Lord says: O my people, I am going to open your graves and bring you up from them, and I will bring you back to the land of Israel. Then you, my people, will know that I am the Lord. When I open your graves and bring you up from them, I will put my spirit in you, and you will live. And I will settle you in your own land. And then you will know that I, the Lord, have spoken, and I have done it, declares the Lord." This is an amazing passage. It's quite a dramatic vision, and it's one of the few passages in the Old Testament which seems to allude to the resurrection of the dead. But in order to fully appreciate this passage, we need to understand the historical backdrop that frames this vision that Ezekiel has. At the time that this story takes place, the kingdom of Israel has already been divided into two kingdoms. We have the northern and the southern kingdoms. And our story begins in 722 BC. And within a period of less than 150 years or so, the people of God in both the northern and the southern kingdoms are sent off into exile. First, there's this Assyrian by the name of Tiglath-Pileser III. Aren't you glad you weren't born in Assyria? And he brings his army in. He took over the whole northern kingdom of Israel and exiled all the citizens, dispersing them throughout the Assyrian kingdom. Next, the Assyrians attack Jerusalem in the southern kingdom of Judah. But by God's intervention, 185,000 Assyrians died, and Jerusalem was saved under King Hezekiah. Then King Hezekiah comes up with this brilliant idea to become best friends with the Babylonian king He starts showing off his wealth, showing off his weapons, and bragging about how great he was in leading the victory against the Assyrians. Didn't give any credit to God. So God sent the prophet Isaiah to warn Hezekiah, don't you become friends with these Babylonians. But, of course, he wouldn't listen. From that time on, Judah was in constant danger of being completely overrun by Babylon. And attempts to mount a rebellion or to become an ally of Egypt or to find help in some other way were to no avail. And this parade of five different kings comes on the scene, and Babylon just picks them off one by one, either assassinating them or sending them off into exile. And they discover that reliance on themselves was no substitute for undivided allegiance to God. Finally, in 589, the Babylonian king, Nebuchadnezzar, he's had enough of these upstarts. He rolls in and he takes over Judah piece by piece. And within 3 years, he's taken over Jerusalem. The city is completely destroyed. The temple is in ruins. And Nebuchadnezzar makes King Zedekiah watch while he kills his sons, and then he gouges his eyes out before hauling him off to Babylon. This is pretty gory stuff, graphic stuff we have in the Old Testament. Can you hear the remnant of God's people? Many have died. Those who are still left are crying in exile. Our bones are dried up and our hope is gone. We are cut off. It's a terrible lament. How could these horrible things possibly happen to the beloved people of God? Well, Ezekiel tells us, in no uncertain terms, he says, they have been abandoned to the consequences of their own sin. In fact, in chapter 22, he makes a list of some of the sins that they were committing. It includes idolatry, violence, disrespect of parents, foreigners becoming victims of extortion, orphans and widows wronged, lying, violating women, adultery, incest, sexual abuse of daughters-in-law, taking of bribes, demanding excessive interest on loans, forgetting God, robbery, and oppressing the poor. It's the tyranny of sin gone rampant. And God is at his wits' end with these people. What are they thinking? He's so despairing. But in chapter 23, he makes this very graphic comparison, saying that the people of God have become like prostitutes, chasing after other lovers and selling themselves to whoever comes down the pike. Pam, I've never heard anyone preach on that text. So God does the only thing there is left to do. And in Ezekiel 10, we read that God's presence, depicted as his glory, which had swept down on the brand new temple of Solomon just about some 350 years earlier during the opening ceremonies, we read that the glory of the Lord now departs from the temple. It's one of the most devastating moments in all of Scripture. The Lord has abandoned the city. Our bones are dried up and our hope is gone. We are cut off. Cut off from the very presence and protection of the Lord. Do you know that feeling? The girls at the New Life Center, where I serve, certainly do. Patra was born into an Akha family in Thailand, near the border with Burma, and she's the third of seven children. She's now 23 years old. When she was young, Patra's responsibilities were to carry water and to gather firewood. And I asked her about her village, and she recalls that everyone she could think of from her village was addicted to drugs. Opium, marijuana, and methamphetamines. Many were also alcoholic, and so Patra's mother raised the family because her father was a meth addict. When Patra was 10 years old, she asked her mother for permission to go to school. Her mother said, "You're just a girl. What do you need to go to school for?" But she begged and begged, and she was finally allowed to go to school, and she attended through the sixth grade. By this time, her father had completely lost his mind to the methamphetamines. He was becoming violent, and no one could go near